Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And now here is Stephen Stone.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome into our Straight Talk broadcast, where we do it every Monday through Friday at this time, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, Ticketkay, all things up and down I-77, and of course throughout the great county of York. Our broadcast is brought to you by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road and Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. And Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. We also are brought to you by our friends at Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, here with Founders. And as always, we broadcast live from Substation 2 here on Cherry Road across from Winthrop University. Our streaming provided by HighSpeedWeb.net. There's not a day that doesn't go by that the coronavirus isn't mentioned in some form or fashion, whether it be in our newscast or even casual conversation, and today's program is no exception, but there is an added twist. With us today is Emily Parrish, the Executive Director, and Katie Motzinger, Community Resource Director of the Children's Attention Home. And if anybody knows about this pandemic and its effects and impact, especially as we're getting ready for school to begin again, it would be you, ladies. So, obviously, good afternoon and welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
It's great to have you. Let's talk about providing a safe haven for children in this time of escalating abuse that is apparently due to the pandemic. That's another side of the pandemic coin that isn't getting a whole lot of airtime, so to speak.
Well, you know, it's thrown everybody. It's been you know, turned the world upside down, and so we have been no exception to that. We serve children who are coming out of abuse and neglect. We serve homeless teens in our community and surrounding communities, and so our children are already at risk. Our children are already coming out of very bad situations, and so what we've seen through this is we have to take different care of the children. We have to, they're stuck at home just like everybody else. You know, we are living in a group setting, and so safety and the health and well-being of our children is obviously top priority. But we've also seen some of the things that have been reported in the news, the things that folks are talking about, is a decrease in the children that are being reported. So we just, our census has gone down a little bit, which is the number of children that we've been serving since all of this, because the calls just aren't coming in. The kids don't have the same support system, being in schools, going to the dentist, going to doctors, seeing, you know, friends and neighbors at parks and things like that. So we have, it's been a little different, the things that we're seeing, the kids that are coming into our care, or the kids that aren't, honestly, at this point.
How can you gauge, what is the barometer, I guess, is the question for the kids that are not? Were these kids that have previously been coming in, but now suddenly are not?
So, since all this happened, statewide, the number of reported child abuse cases has dropped 55%. Typically, we're serving, we have capacity for 42 children at the Children's Attention Home. And we typically, before all of this occurred, we were at about 80% occupancy. Since then, we've been between 55 and 60%. And that it's unheard of to the reduction in the number of calls, the reduction in the number of cases. The children that we're seeing are kids that have been in the foster care system for a long time, because there's just not as many people making contact with other children, with children who may not have reported cases, or who may not have been in school, or who may not have been out and about.
So it's not a situation that is getting better, you know, which is what you'd like to think. It's more a situation that is just kind of, I don't want to say falling by the wayside, but it's just not being pursued or reported as it previously has been or as it should be.
I mean, all of that. It is certainly a concern. That's what we have been very vocal over the past couple of months, and trying to make sure that folks are looking out for their neighbors. Folks are, you know, looking for children and just trying to stay aware of unusual circumstances, because without their support, their village, their teachers, their, you know, folks that see them on a regular basis, people don't know. And, you know, everybody's under a tremendous amount of stress. Everybody's very overwhelmed. And so, again, these kids that were already in a bad situation, it can be much worse for them. You know, I mean, we're at the home, we're trying to focus on the children that we've got, just because they've already dealt with so much trauma and abuse and neglect and homelessness, that this added on top of it, just the stress of the unknown, the stress of not being in school, the stress of not being able to see parents and family. It's a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, on top of what Emily has mentioned, you know, the court cases have been delayed or postponed unless it was an emergency situation. And so contact with their families has only just recently, within the last probably month, picked back up. But before that, it was all virtual. And so they were literally at the home, just like everybody else, but separated from their family, whereas a lot of people, you know, when they're stuck at home, they're with their family. And so regardless of the situation they come from, our kids still very much love their family. They love their parents. They love their siblings that they're not seeing right now. And so that can be, I mean, that's on top of what's going on. That's the additional trauma that they're experiencing, right, in addition to the anxiety that's just in the society around them.
Now, with school getting ready to start, is this something that you think may start to turn around where you begin to see and hear from these children again?
I think that's the hope. And, you know, it's been so impressive the work that the teachers have been doing, the school district has been doing to try to follow up with these students to make the sudden shift to virtual learning. And we certainly hope that as, you know, we go into a more formalized education system, either in person or virtual, that there will be more checks and balances. Because again, I think that, you know, things change so quickly. Folks were really just in crisis management survival mode, that hopefully as we move forward, we'll start to hear from some of these kids that really need our help.
We have heard recently about, of course, you know, when the schools suddenly stopped in March and everything became virtual learning, there were a number of students that kind of went off the radar, so to speak. I mean, became, as they called, MIA, you know. And there's been a statewide effort and locally as well to track down the students and families. I know we talked with Michael Frost from Rock Hill School District, their spokesperson. They had efforts underway in which to locate these, you know, children and reach out and make contact with the families that just suddenly disappeared. Nobody particularly went anywhere. They just kind of sheltered in place, for lack of a better term, or bunkered down, or whatever adjective you care to use. You've had that same problem?
We see ebbs and flows in our population. Summertime, the census always dips because nobody's reporting the children. So it was the same type thing. When there are times of economic pressure, when there are times of high unemployment, we see increases in child abuse cases because of the added stress at home. And so I think that's what's so scary, is that both are happening at the same time. So the numbers have gone down for us in terms of children that we're serving, but the evidence is there that the need has gone up. And so we are hoping that it will turn around. We are trying. We've been vigilant this whole time to try to make contact with different community partners, to let them know that we're here, to let them know our services, because again, our kids are already at risk. You know, our kids are already in bad situations. You know, these are the kids that need the extra attention. These are the kids that need the meals and the in-person, you know, therapy appointments and visits and things like that. And so we have been busy trying to make sure that folks know that we're here and that we can be a resource. And hopefully things will start to turn as the world opens up some.
For those who don't know who the Children's Attention Home is, maybe we should touch on that, because we get new listeners all the time. As you know, the county's growing by leaps and bounds with everything that's coming in and that sort of thing. And there may be someone out there right now within the sound of our voices that maybe has never heard of the Children's Attention Home.
So we are a home here in Rock Hill. This is our 50th year, so we've been around for a very long time. We serve children who are in DSS custody for abuse, neglect, or abandonment. We also serve children who are homeless in our community, or at risk of becoming homeless. So we have two different avenues that children can come and access our programs and our services.
Katie, yeah, they. Yeah, I mean, we look holistically at the child. You know, our goal is not just that We're giving them a safe place to live and sleep and providing basic needs, but we're really going beyond that. It's what do they need for their education? What do they need to make sure they're socially developing? What do they need to make sure that they're preparing for a life on their own? Most of our kids at this point are 13 and older. We do have some younger kids, but most of them are older. And so it's what does life look like for them beyond that K through 12 education? Is it, some of them may have dropped out of school by the time they get to us. And so are we helping them finish high school or get their GED? Are we helping them get to tech school, find an apprenticeship, get career experience for the first time, get driver's licenses? We're really running the gamut as far as like with each individual child that comes in, looking at their case and their situation and saying, what do you need? Because there's not a cookie cutter solution. And so that's from the very beginning, something that the home has really prided itself in is making sure that we're treating each child as their own individual person. We serve a lot of sibling groups. Even within those sibling groups, I'm sure if you have kids or grandkids or siblings of your own, you know that you're not the same, you know? Right. You have different needs and different desires, different goals. And so making sure that we're meeting, even within those sibling groups, exactly each child where they are is really important. And so we have a team that works very diligently to do that. There's a lot of teamwork involved in what we do. And I think it's, for a lot of people, they underestimate the size of the operation it takes to do this. It's a common question, how many people work for you or work at the home? And we have over 60 employees that work at the home. It's a 24/7 operation where there's a lot of supervision, a lot of support and guidance and resource for the kids. And that takes dollars, that takes community support. And the interesting thing is that the community has been the support of the home and the reason we've been able to do what we do from day one. It was a community effort from the beginning. It was churches and Winthrop and businesses and individuals that really came together to see this home come to fruition. And it's been the community that's carried it through all of its years, its ups and downs. And right now what we've seen is it's been the community to help us sustain when we've put out a cry and said, we need help with meals or we need help with activities for the kids or whatever the case may be. Our community has really surrounded our kids with love and the attention that they need in order for us to help meet those needs where they are in that moment and be prepared to do it.
Well, let's take that a step further. What is it that the Children's Attention Home needs? What are your needs? What do you need?
Yeah, so we actually on our website have a whole page of ways that you can help during COVID because it looks very different right now. We're not able to do in-person opportunities. And so where we would normally have, we normally have over 200 just individual volunteers throughout the year. And a lot of those individuals are helping with, like I said, providing activities for the kids, mentoring, helping with their education, or just serving on site as receptionists or in the kitchen or in maintenance positions or administratively. But we can't have those people on site for their safety and ours and our teams right now. And so right now there are some really big ways you can help. One of them is giving financially. And I know it feels overstated, but dollars are the most flexible way that people can support us and that we can then use that resource to support the kids. And there's a number of ways that people can give, especially right now. If you have, there's an additional tax incentive for giving, an additional $300 above the standard deduction, plus company matching and things like that. In addition to that, we have our needs list. And so on Amazon, you can go and just order something to be delivered as opposed to having to go out and shop for it. So we put a large emphasis on making sure that list is kept up to date with very specific items that we need. And then meals, as I mentioned, meals are a big one. We are working very diligently to conserve our dollars because we've seen a downtick in some of the donations as well as some effects on the fundraising side where we haven't been able to host some of the events that we have in the past. And so making sure that we are, backfilling where we can and where people can help is making sure that we're getting meals provided so that's we don't have to spend our dollars on food because people are helping us by supplementing that part of our budget.
Now, you're not getting federal grants or anything like that. I mean, basically, you are sustaining yourselves by what you're able to raise. Is that right? Am I understanding that correctly?
No. So the way that our budget works is about 45% of it comes from the Department of Social Services.
Okay.
So for every night that a foster child stays with us, we're reimbursed from DSS, but it only covers about 45% of what we actually spend to support that child. And so 45% of our budget is there. About 10 to 15% of it is in federal grants. So There's a grant called Victims of Crime Act. It's also used by places like Safe Passage, domestic violence shelters, police organizations to help support organizations that help victims of crime. And so we have some reimbursements that can come through that as well. But the remaining 45% of the budget, 40% of the budget comes through community grants and donations, corporate support. And that's where, you know, so if you look at 40% of a $2.5 million budget, that's a big chunk every year that we have to go out and ask people to support what we do, to raise the money that we need to have to support what we need for the kids.
When we come back from our mid-program break, we're going to talk about how to do that and some of the things that you have coming up, and we'll talk about how you've been hamstrung in the process because of the pandemic, and, you know, life certainly is nowhere near the normal we knew 9 months ago, and we'll talk about that in the second part of our Straight Talk program for this Tuesday. Emily Parrish, Executive Director, and Katie Motzinger, Community Resource Director of the Children's Attention Home, are our guests today here on Straight Talk. Our broadcast is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders, and of course we broadcast live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road across from Winthrop University here in Rock Hill. Now here's the high pressure part, girls. As you know, having been on this show before, they make the subs and salads here at Substation 2 in a most magical way that we will all chant on the count of three, and that is 3, 2, 1. Slice, 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 slice.
Garden.
Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
This is Dr. Karen Jenkins, Emergency Room Director at Piedmont Medical Center. When someone is experiencing a life-threatening emergency, such as a stroke or a heart attack, every second counts. Piedmont Medical Center's emergency departments in Rock Hill and on Gold Hill Road in Fort Mill are open 24/7 to treat life's unexpected emergencies. Even in the middle of a pandemic, our commitment to providing safe, high-quality emergency medical care in our community remains strong. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Are you looking to relax, spend time with the family, or cruise the open road with your new motorcycle to get away? Founders Federal Credit Union is offering low interest rates on recreational vehicle loans. Whether you need a boat, jet ski, ATV, camper, or a motorcycle for your next adventure, we can help. Relax, it's time to play. Visit foundersfcu.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
These days, there are plenty of ways to stay connected to the internet. Laptops, phones, tablets, games, you name it. But the more devices you use in your home, the tougher it is to get a strong, consistent Wi-Fi signal. Comporium's premium Wi-Fi kit adds multiple Wi-Fi access points throughout your home, eliminating dead zones and interference, while spreading your signal more evenly so you can enjoy a better online experience. Right now, get our premium Wi-Fi for only $9.99 per month. Premium Wi-Fi from Comporium. Connect your whole home.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Our common sense investing is not designed to take your life savings, roll the dice, and make you rich. We design a plan to keep the standard of living you have grown accustomed to the same throughout your retirement, be it 20, 30, or even 40 more years. Anderson Griggs Investments, 324-5044, or online at andersongriggs.com.
This is Charlie Ruffalo. I want to personally thank everyone for supporting Substation 2 during this pandemic. This has not been an easy time for many of us, but you keep coming back day after day for our fresh subs and salads, and that has helped us keep the doors open and our employees on the payroll. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rock Hill and York County, for supporting Substation 2 these past 34 years, and especially now. Substation 2 really loves you. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
Emily Parrish, the Executive Director, and Katie Motzinger, Community Resource Director of Children's Attention Home, are our guests here today. We've been talking about providing a safe haven for children in a time of escalating abuse due to the coronavirus pandemic. But before we went to break, we were talking about the activities and things that they do for these children, and of course throughout the year, and various fundraising events. But since March, when a pandemic was officially declared, you weren't able to do any of those things like your annual, you know, event in April, and now you've got another event coming up, but it's going to be different this time because it's going to be virtual, quote unquote, and that puts a different spin on things as well.
It does. I mean, we've had to take a different approach to everything, just like everybody else. We've had to pivot and adjust. This all did hit right at one of the busiest times for the home. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and so there's always a lot of community events where we just raise awareness about what's going on, about the home and the children that we serve. And so obviously all of those were canceled. April is also when we have our largest fundraiser of the year, and so we were of course unable to do that. There was no time to figure out how to do it virtually, and so since then we have moved everything to a virtual platform again, just like everybody else. So our kids are able to have virtual mentoring. We're doing things like yoga online, so the kids can still do that. We have been able to partner with different folks in the community who have sponsored like family fun activities. We've done field day on campus. We've had folks sponsor. There's a slip and slide, like one of the big water slides coming in tomorrow. So just different things like that. It has been amazing how the community has still found ways to support us. It's been very important to us this whole time to make sure that we are still providing a normal experience for the kids, that they're still able to have some fun this summer. I mean, These kids have had enough. They've been through enough, and everybody, I think, is exhausted with the current circumstances. So we have been very actively looking for new ways to and creative ways to do things with the kids and to engage the community. We have a lot of opportunities for volunteers virtually. We're looking for virtual mentors who have kind of come back into the picture, and it's a very nice thing for the kids. Like Katie mentioned before the break, we've got the meal partner opportunities. We've got family fun sponsorships there, and we are preparing for our 50th celebration, which, just like you said, will be all virtual instead of the large in-person 50th celebration. We have worked diligently to get it shifted into a virtual platform.
How do you do that? Seriously, I mean,
it's a lot of work.
I mean, you're already kind of behind because you missed two big events already
right.
this year due to the situation of the pandemic.
Right.
Now you've got this monster coming up. I mean, 50 doesn't come around very often.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
How, you know, and yes, obviously it has to take an ungodly amount of work. How do you, you know, shift it from the one platform to the other?
So we've been working over the last 5 months, really trying to gauge what was going to be the fall. And a lot of people postponed their events to the fall thinking we were going to be back in person. And we continued to watch it and made the decision in June to pursue the virtual platform just because we felt like that was going to be the most realistic approach for us at that time. And it has been a challenge. It's, you know, how do you engage people when your kitchen is right there or your living rooms are, you know, you can change the channel, whatever, you know, how do you make sure that it's something that people want to be a part of? And that's really been our challenge, is not just having a virtual event, but making sure that people feel a part of what we're doing, because that's the in-person effect, right?
Right.
You're in the room, you're experiencing what's going on. And so we're getting really creative. We've got some really fun things planned, and I think people are really going to enjoy what we're putting together. It's going to be live streamed on October 24th. It'll be from 7 to 8 p.m. online, and we're going to be getting information up this week of, you know, how to donate an auction item, how to be a sponsor, how to register. But really, we want to still make sure we have that collective feel of the community's support that has gotten the home through the last 50 years. You know, we've served over 8,000 children since day one. And so it's not just 50 years of being an organization. It's 50 years of giving love and care and attention to these kids that are not getting it where they should be. And that's important. It's important to recognize that it's not just a milestone. It's not just a year marker. You know, this is 50 years of investment from people all across this community that have made these kids' lives better. You know, where would they be if it were not for the home and the people that made the home possible and our mission possible? And so that's where we're focusing, is how do we honor that legacy? How do we celebrate, you know, despite what's going on, celebrate the work, the good work that's being done right now? and how do we look forward to the next 50 years and what's in store? We had a big strategic retreat in January before all of this came about, and have some really big goals. And just because this is going on doesn't mean that we can't still approach those goals and move forward with those. It's just going to look different. But there's still kids that need our help. There's still kids that are, like Emily has mentioned, stuck in situations that are out of their control. But as the community, we can do something about it. And that's what's so exciting about reaching this 50-year mark is the opportunity to gather people around this mission at a time when these kids need it the most.
In the course of 50 years, we're talking to probably three generations of children that you all have helped. Do you ever hear back from those children after they've become adults and such? I mean, obviously, those have to be some really wonderful stories.
We do. I've had the honor, really, of being at the Children's Home for 16 years. And so I have several children that I have maintained contact with throughout my time. We have a lot of kids that will occasionally stop by the campus. I have children that were at the home when I started that now have children of their own and that are doing very well for themselves. And I think that's a testament to the good work that the Children's Home does every day. And that will continue through. This is a hard time, an unusual time, but we will continue to serve those children. We will continue to do what we need to do. And I mean, those kids that are pushing through are the ones that show exactly what's happening.
So there are success stories to all of this.
Oh, every day we have a success story.
I think it's really interesting, though. You know, I think what people envision as success is different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the high school graduation or buying your first car. It can be things as simple as making your first friend.
Yeah.
You know, it can be things like I'm brushing my teeth every day now, or I am now eating vegetables. I mean, some of the challenges that these kids have to overcome because of what they were not given the foundation for early on may seem minor in some respects, but they're huge milestones. And our team works so hard every day to guide these kids in those directions. And so I think success looks different for every child. Just I think, you know, that you hear it in the school district a lot that it's very individualized, and that's the same with our kids. And we've been fortunate over the last 50 years, like Emily said, to have seen some of those transitions and seen that cycle of abuse and neglect be broken through generations that have come through the home.
There you go. Just right there. Now,
wow.
Our final moment, how can folks get a hold of you all?
If you go to our website, attentionhome.org, all of our information is there. You can call the home, 803-328-8871.
How often do you call yourself? I get that. I understand. Yeah, no, I understand.
My own direct line, which is fine. You can call me too. But, you know, give us a call. Go online. We're on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of them. And we work very hard to keep those pages up to date and where people can be connected. And like I said, this week we'll be putting up more information about our 50th and where people can register to be a part of that experience. And we mean an experience. It's not just going to be a live stream. It's something you're going to want to, you don't want to miss it.
And as we just witnessed, you can donate anytime.
You can.
Amazing.
We just had somebody very generously.
I'll tell you who he was after we get done.
Great.
Okay? Unless
Thank
he wants me not to, and he'll tell me. But that's good. Of course, Emily Parrish with us today, Executive Director, Katie Motzinger, the Community Resource Director, Children's Attention Home. The website again?
Attentionhome.org.
And is there a phone number folks can call if they have more questions?
Yes, it is. It's 803-328-8871.
One more time.
803-328-8871.
So you always give the phone number out twice if you can, and the website. There you
Absolutely.
Go. Ladies, the time flew by, but you're doing God's work, and God bless you both and all the folks that are working with you to do this.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for having us.
We appreciate you being here. Our broadcast, Straight Talk today, live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road across from Winthrop University. We'll get back to what they do in a second, but I will remind you we're brought to you by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant, and Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. Here with Founders. They make subs and salads here, and they do it in a very, very magical way. They're the best you can ever stink your teeth into on the entire planet, I'll guarantee it. And they do it how, girls?
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Manning Kimmel back with you tomorrow. Have a great day, won't you?